This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The day has arrived. The big one. Yes, it is here. It is game day, people. The semi-finals of the Euros with England facing Denmark. As if you didn't know that by now. The last time England reached this stage of the Euros was way back in 1996 with that heartbreaking game against Germany at Wembley Stadium. But memories of that night will be long forgotten if Gareth Southgate and the boys conquer the Danes and take us through to our first final in a major tournament since 1966. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. It is one step at a time. I'm Adam Smith and welcome along to episode 31 of the official England podcast, the only place where you can get daily exclusive interviews, news and insight straight from the Three Lions camp. And boy, have we got a show in store for you today. They call me the postman and here's what I'm delivering to your front door. We'll bring you all the latest news from St George's Park, including who's been embarrassing Calvin Phillips in training. Manager Gareth Southgate and captain Harry Kane spoke to the media ahead of the big game.
We're not taking Denmark lightly by any means. We know they're a very tough team.
The people have spoken. We have listened. Yes, it wouldn't be a match day show without the return of Smithy's Stat Attack. Luke Shaw steps into the Lions' den with Josh Denzel before departing for London.
All the lads are really excited and hopefully, you know, we can put on a show for the fans.
I spoke exclusively to Danish footy legend Peter Schmeichel.
Give football a meaning, give this tournament a meaning and go out and play.
And the exclusive interviews don't stop there, as I also spoke to BBC's lead football presenter and former England legend, Gary Lineker.
I've had two broadcasting ambitions. One of them's to broadcast the FA Cup final with Leicester winning it. Yeah. And the other's for England to win a major tournament that I'm broadcasting.
It's time for kickoff, so blow your whistle, ref, and let's get started.
You're listening to the official England podcast.
Yesterday, the lads had their final training session, which was partially streamed live across England's social channels. Calvin Phillips was rather miffed that Jack Grealish got the better of him in training, sharing an old school pic of Grealish on Instagram stories with the caption, "Can't believe this guy megged me in the boxes." Great stuff. And in fairness, it looked like everyone had their shooting boots on too, including Reece James, who put a screamer past Sam Johnson into the top right bin that even earned him a handshake from Jude Bellingham. In the afternoon, the squad left St George's Park to head down to Wembley ahead of the game. It's another fully fit squad heading into the biggest game of the tournament so far. A huge boost for Gareth Southgate as he picks his troops ahead of battle. And speaking of Gareth Southgate, he spoke to the media yesterday alongside skipper Harry Kane.
Very excited about the game, that's for sure. And we know that we're going to have tremendous support throughout the country. So that's a great feeling for us. I think we're ready for the game. I think the players are ready. They've got tremendous experience now themselves, having been in this situation before. So I think our preparation's been calm. And we know we're playing a really good opponent. We knew that before the autumn. We knew even more so after the games in the autumn. So it's going to be a really, really tight game, I think, and I think an exciting game for everybody. We've got players that make good decisions on the field now. They've got experience of coming up against different systems. They know how to counter those systems and they know where to find the spaces. So it's great because we've been working together for quite a long time now that we understand our own patterns of play and it means that there's a consistency in the way that we operate, really.
We're not taking Denmark lightly by any means. We know they're a very tough team. They've got some great players and they're obviously a great unit of a team as well. So, yeah, we're in a great position where we're two games away. So it's important that our focus is on tomorrow night and about us and what we can do. And we know if we can get it right, then it should be enough to get us over the line.
It is match day, which means the hashtag SmithyStatAttack has been the number one trend on social media for the past 24 hours. And if you believe that, then quite simply, you'll believe absolutely anything. Back by popular demand, here is everything you statistically need to know about today's game. Cue jingle, which we spent far too long making. SmithyStatAttack! So here are the stats that matter as England head into the Dane Jazone. England have won just one of their last six competitive meetings, with Denmark drawing three and losing two. Cool. Way to start off on a positive note, Smithy. Moving on swiftly. This will be the third meeting between England and Denmark in a major tournament. England won 3-0 in the second round of the 2002 World Cup after a goalless draw in the group stages of Euro 1992, a competition, incidentally, that Denmark went on to win. And listen to this one. All seven meetings between England and Denmark at Wembley Stadium have finished 1-0, with England winning five and Denmark winning two. Nutty. England have kept a clean sheet in all five of their games at Euro 2020 so far. No team has ever kept six clean sheets in a single edition of the European Championships or World Cup. Harry Kane has been involved in 27 goals in his last 26 games for England. 18 goals and 9 assists, that is. He has 9 goals at major tournaments, with only Gary Lineker netting more such goals for England with 10. No European player has scored more major tournament goals for their country since the start of the 2018 World Cup than captain Harry Kane, who has netted 9 times. That is the same as Cristiano Ronaldo. That boy is world class. As for Denmark, they have scored 11 goals so far in Euro 2020. Only Spain, with 12, have scored more coming into the semi-final matches. It's the most goals Denmark have ever scored in a single edition of a major tournament. Kasper Dolberg has 3 goals for Denmark in Euro 2020. Only 2 Danish players have scored more at a single edition of a major tournament before. With Preben Ekjær Larsen in the 1986 World Cup and John Dahl Thomason in the 2002 World Cup, each scoring 4. Smithy's stat attack completed it, mate.
You're listening to the official England podcast.
As the team was departing St George's Park, Josh Denzel managed to grab a quick word with Luke Shaw. Here's what they spoke about.
It's been brilliant, really. I think, especially after the group stages, it's gone so quick.
Yeah.
You know, I think before the Germany game, we had, I think, 6 days. And I think after that, they said, you know, when it starts going knockout rounds, it's going to go quick, and it's gone so quick, isn't it? So it's like a game by game, but you can't really sort of, you just got to, you know, get the game done with and sort of forget about it. As much as we want to enjoy it, there's another massive important game, so we kind of just refocus and we're ready again.
I know you kind of half laugh it off, and people call you Roberto Carlos, or Deck calls you Roberto Shaw. I don't know where that one come from. But, like, in terms of the man himself, I know he followed you the other day. Like, he had this to say about it. He goes, he's been proving each game, and he's got everything to get to the top. He's the left-back for England. In that self, it says a lot. Like, how nice is that to have, like, the man himself come out and go, yes, you're doing your thing?
Nah, to be fair, I haven't even seen any of that. That's the first time I've heard of it. Obviously, it's so nice to hear things from, you know, one of the best left-backs ever. And of course, like I said, after the game, when I seen he had followed me and commented on my photo, I couldn't believe it, to be honest. It was a weird feeling, but, you know, one that, you know, I take massive respect from it. And, you know, it's really nice to hear words from someone like that.
Sure. And on lines then, we spoke about you being able to kind of block out that negativity. But on the other side of that, how do you kind of keep your feet on the ground when so much praise is being heaped onto you and onto the team in general?
I think it's best to kind of ignore it all. I think inside the camp, we're all very positive. And I think whatever's said on the outside, we just sort of, you know, block it out. We know what we're doing. We know we're in a good moment. And, you know, what an even bigger moment for tomorrow's game. You know, it's massive. The occasion's massive. But it's one we just got to go out and enjoy and do what we've been doing. the Germany atmosphere, like I said, was one of the best I've ever played in, and I think it felt like a full stadium then. A semi-final tomorrow at Wembley with 60,000, I think it's going to be even more special. So all the lads are really excited and hopefully, you know, we can put on a show for the fans.
I am delighted, no, honoured in fact, to be joined now on the official England podcast by one of the greatest goalkeepers of all time, a man who won a host of trophies for club and country, a man who redefined the modern keeper, a man whose son is now one of the best keepers in the tournament, and a man who knows England's opposition as well as anyone. It is, of course, Danish football legend and someone I know very well, Peter Schmeichel. Peter, how are you doing, mate? And did you enjoy that introduction?
Smithies, thank you very much.
Oh, he's bowing. I love that. Anything that I missed out? Because obviously, there's so much you've achieved. No, I couldn't get everything in.
Please don't embarrass me too much.
Okay, fine. Fair enough. We'll look straight ahead because we know why you're on. It is England against Denmark in the semi-final of the Euros. Huge game. Just how excited are you ahead of this one?
Massive. It's absolutely massive. And I think it's one of them. It's so evenly balanced in terms of who the real favourite is here. And the importance of this game when you look in relation to the nation. This is, I mean, it is a fantastic game and it's something to look forward to. I'm absolutely sure we'll get a good game.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it will be a very entertaining game. How do you watch it? How nervous do you get? Because obviously not only is it a huge game for your country, also the country that you served, you know, and won a major tournament with, but also your son plays in goal. So is it very, do you get just butterflies, nerves? How does it work on match day for you?
Well, I learned a long time ago to take most of the emotions out when Casper plays because the number of games every week, you know, that would just keep me in a constant state of nervousness. So I don't see much value in that. So I very quickly decided that he was capable, that he was there and merit, and he can do the job. So I think my sort of level of anxiety and nervousness, if you like, is the same as yours. You know, this is huge for Denmark. You know, I've played a lot of games for the country. It was one of my biggest dreams growing up, playing for Denmark. And I know what it's like from the inside, and you know, and I know the excitement of producing results for a relatively small country in terms of population, but. You know, I wouldn't say a small country in terms of the footballing world. So to be in a semi-final, it's just incredible for our country.
And of course, you achieved as a nation, as an individual, something that we haven't experienced in England ever, winning the Euro. So I just wanted to ask your personal memories of winning Euro 92 as a player. That must have been such a special moment for you in your career.
Of course, it was incredibly special.
Yeah.
Not having qualified in the first place and being called up very late. Then having to regroup and you know, we got very little time to prepare and we always knew we were a good team. We always knew that we didn't qualify because we had a really, really bad start to the qualification. But we ended up probably being best team in the group and we, you know, beating Yugoslavia away and stuff like that. But we messed it up in the beginning, but progressively we got better. So we knew we weren't a bad team, but we just didn't know where we were in terms of form on the day. And I think because the first game we did play was against England, I think when we came out of that, having actually produced more chances than England had, and the disappointment of not having won that game, I think that gave us the belief and also the extra energy to sort of go on and actually try and compete in the tournament. Of course, we lost the second game, but the way the results sort of panned out was that if we won the third one, we could progress. And we did. And there's a difference between now and then is that once we progressed from the group phase, we were straight into the semifinals.
Yeah.
And England and Denmark now, they've had to play two knockout games to get to here. So there is a very big difference between then and now. And it's before we get into this comparing then and now, we might as well just put that to bed because it is impossible.
Yeah, interesting. I want to get your insight into what's being said in Denmark, in the sort of Danish media about this team so far. Is this sort of a huge achievement, just getting to the semi-final? Is there a state of euphoria in the country just to get this far? Or actually, is there real belief that Denmark could go all the way in this tournament?
I think there's been real belief in football corners, or people who know about football, about this team. We've had a patch, a long period of time where football has not been the most popular thing in Denmark. It always was the most popular thing. Our league has not been, you know, present in the big European tournaments as much as we would like to. The quality has not been the best. Competition from other sports, competition from social media, it's been difficult for football to buy into the younger generations. This achievement by the team has obviously, you know, bounded everyone together, and you know, we now have a similar situation to every time the Danish team has been in a big tournament where they've done well, where you know, everyone meet up, they watch the games together, and the whole country is talking about it. I don't think there is a big difference between what's happening in England now and what is happening in Denmark.
Oh,
people
really
are very excited about it.
Yeah,
I think that the only sort of really big difference is that we will not say that we are going to win it.
Right.
I think from early on, there has been an expectation to the English team to go and win it. It's there for you. It's served on a, you know, on a platter for you. And people who know football knows that, you know, it's not as easy as that.
Yeah.
So I think the Danish team has had it a little bit better in terms of the pressure that can be put on them, as to, you know, not everyone was looking for, not, well, I say not looking for, because people was going, they were going to watch the games anyway, but they didn't have this, there were no big expectations to, you know, performance and results, and not the, you know, not a massive build up every day about, you know, everything. So, but it's there now. It's incredible now.
Yeah, what have you been most impressed with? There's been a lot of key performance. Obviously, Kasper doing well in goal. Højbjerg's getting the assist. We've seen Dolberg with three goals. What are the sort of key areas? I'm trying to tap into where the game can be sort of won and lost from an English perspective, but where are the key areas in this game for you from a Danish perspective? You're not going to tell me?
I'm not going to tell you how you win this game.
You saw me coming with that question.
No, I think you know, with we're talking about Denmark as a team. It is a team. We don't have the big superstar. We got well-known names.
Yeah.
Again, I really want to compare the two teams, the two squads. The depth and squad on both teams it's just incredible. Mm. England have bigger names, but I think that's more than anything down to the popularity of the Premier League. I think the level is just incredibly high in both squads. And I think the way that they approach the games are very similar. I think it's all based on a really solid defense with very quick players, very aggressive players in wide positions, two center midfield players that you know, provide security for creative players to go and try and lose the ball. If they lose the ball, they'll be there. Then you have quick strikers up front. I think one of the question mark that we had before this tournament was of all the chances that we create, who is the guy that's going to put the last foot to it or the last touch to it and put it in the net?
Okay.
And I think we've come up with the answers. So that was probably my biggest worry before the tournament, that we wouldn't score enough goals, but we've scored a lot of goals now.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, it's very evenly balanced in terms of sort of pre-game analysis of strength, individual strength, but also squad strength. And again, also two very similar coaches who views the game in a very modern way, who are very individual in their management of the players, but also incredibly teamless in terms of, you know, some players will play today, other players won't. Some players start the game, but next time they're in the stand. You know, this is about the 26 players, but every single player will be, you know, managed and will know their situation and why they're not or why they are. And I think that, you know, everything across the board looks a little bit similar to me.
It's interesting hearing that. And it's interesting hearing you speaking about it from a Danish perspective. And also, I respect you not giving away too many secrets from the Danish team. I respect that. So the similar question, really, I suppose, what is the belief from within Denmark, from the Danish pundits, Danish press, about this England team, how good it is and how much of a threat that it possesses for Denmark?
I think it's very similar to what I just said. Mm. I think everybody views this as a 50-50.
Really? 50-50, yeah. Yeah,
I think they do. The one thing that separates the two teams in what people who's never tried it before eyes is the fact that it's at Wembley.
Yeah.
And a lot of people will see this as a massive advantage to England. I've played England at Wembley. Mm. It's never easy. Mm. It's never been easy, I have to say that. But it's never been a disadvantage because Wembley is the one football stadium you really want to play in. If you know, if you are that lucky that you get to a Champions League final in your career, you cross your fingers that Champions League final is being played at Wembley. It is.
Wow, interesting. Yeah.
No one has that Wembley thing.
So really? That's interesting.
I think every player who plays a game at Wembley will feel privileged to play that game.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying it's a disadvantage. Or England has an advantage with their home crowd. They have some, but it's not a massive one. I can only take, and this is a very personal opinion.
Yeah,
this is how I felt.
Of course.
I played only at the old Wembley, I have to say. Mm. I was very lucky to play there a lot of times, play there against England. And it never lost its magic to me. Never. It was always an experience. It was always something that inspired me to play. Mm. I'm sure the Danish players will feel inspired to go on that pitch.
Yeah, it's interesting hearing that. Why that sort of, I didn't surprise me, but obviously we do look at it as a huge motivation for England because as an Englishman, you think that Wembley's the pinnacle. But it's interesting that hearing it from foreign players' perspective and a Danish player's perspective, that actually that will be extra motivation as well. So it's fascinating to hear that. One thing that we've got to talk about, of course, which is ultimately bigger than football, is what happened to Christian Eriksen. I'm sure you can agree it was horrible what we all watched and stuff. And it's great that he is now out of hospital and we wish him a full recovery. How difficult was that to watch and seeing your son, obviously knowing him and being friends with him and going through that? How tough was that? And what would you like to say on everything that's happened and how proud you are of the Danish team to still be in the tournament, having witnessed that?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to find the right and correct words. Mm. I was at the stadium. I was working for Danish TV that night. We were diagonally opposite of where it was. And straight away, our TV station cut off the pictures. So being nearly 100 yards away, it was very difficult to see what had actually happened because obviously the TV pictures that we did show was when he received the ball from the throw-in.
Yeah.
That would have been on a monitor behind me.
Right.
I was watching the game directly. So I didn't really see what happened and I didn't understand it for a very long time. Wasn't a lot of information around, but of course, you can see that something was very, very wrong. And but we did not know precisely what had happened. That information came to us a lot later. Mm. But seeing that it was serious, and see how the players they responded and protected Christian, protected Sabrina, his girlfriend. Mm. And was looking after one another was very impressive. Obviously, we know, looking back, we know precisely what happened and how traumatic it would have been for the players to be there and so close to it. And that makes it even more impressive that they could do what they did on the pitch. And of course, very quickly, it came back to us that he was all right. And he'd been in contact with the squad and he was alive, so that helped a lot. And in the next days were just positive news.
Yeah.
But of course, you can't, the images that the players they carry with them, you can't take them away. They saw their teammate.
Yeah.
And to quote the doctor, he said he was gone.
Yeah.
They saw that, and that in order to come back from that and perform the way they did against Belgium the next game, that for me was impressive. That was just how do you find the strength to do that? Mm. And of course, Eric got released and came to the camp, which is well publicized. Came to the camp and said, "Listen, make sure you prioritize football now. I'm okay. Now make football, give football a meaning, give this tournament a meaning, and go out and play." So of course, there's been a little bit of energy won from the positive outcome. But I have to say that most of the positive performances that the Danish team have put out has actually been on how good they are. So,
I think well said. I totally agree with everything you said. Let's get a prediction then, Peter. Go on. England v Denmark. How do you see it going?
I want to be smiling after the game.
Okay.
So I'll be nervous before.
Yeah.
And I will smile after.
Okay.
And whatever happens in 90, 120 minutes plus penalties, I don't care. Honestly, don't care.
You just want to be smiling after.
You know what? I think it really is. It is a tasty prospect.
Yeah.
It is. It's incredible. And I, no matter what happens, I'm so proud of the Danish team. I'm also very, very proud of the English team. I think having gone through the whole coaching education with the FA, and understanding the thinking from inside, what they need to do, what they've set out to do, and Gareth literally, they tried to. The media has tried a little bit to put little chings into the armor on Gareth, and it just deflects, and he does precisely what he feels is right. It's been incredible. He's been incredible. So no matter what happens in this game, you know, there really is a lot to be proud of for both nations and both teams and both managers.
I think that's perfectly well. But it's almost like this is the final you want, I suppose, isn't it? Your home team, Denmark, and the team and the country that you played so many years in. You must have, it's probably the final that you wanted, isn't it, Denmark v England?
It's a horrible game.
Yeah, I bet it is. I bet you have sort of, it's a tough one for you. Yeah.
It is. It is. I always support England. I always had this great, I always, even from when I was young, I've never been to England. It was before, 10 years before I ever came to England, I had this relationship to the country. I always felt that I belonged in England. And of course, being lucky enough to come over to England, play most of my career there, play for my boyhood, club, the one that I supported, getting to know, the English people and being part of the society, of course. It's difficult, but of course, my country is Denmark. I was born in Denmark, so I will support them today. But it's a horrible game to watch when you have those feelings.
Brilliant. Peter, this is a perfect note to end it in. You're an absolute top guy. Great to catch up with you as always. Hopefully, we'll catch up soon, mate.
Thanks, mate. Take care.
You're listening to the official England podcast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm pleased to say, joining me on the official England podcast now is quite simply an England legend. With 80 caps to his name, 48 goals, he is England's third highest goal scorer of all time. He also holds the record for most tournament goals ever for England, and he is also the first Englishman to win a golden boot at a major tournament. As well as all of that, he's one of the most recognisable faces in the game as BBC's lead football presenter. It is, of course, Gary Lineker. Gary, thank you so much for joining us. I know you're extremely busy, so how are you doing, first off?
Yeah, great. Yeah, my pleasure to join. Yeah, I've been enjoying the tournament. It's great that England are playing so well. It puts everyone in a good mood, and it's also a lot easier to broadcast when it's positive rather than negative. So that's a relief.
It's so true that. Now, before we talk about this, so much to talk about with England and, of course, looking ahead to the next game. I just think it's applicable because you're at the heart of the tournament. I think our listeners will be intrigued to know just a bit of sort of behind the scenes in terms of how your preparation goes. I suppose a typical match day when you're on air, you know, what time you get to the studio, how the nerves are, the match day preps. We'll just get your insight on that really first.
During a tournament, we're usually, you know, based together in some wherever the tournament is. But obviously, this one's a little bit different. Yeah. Not in the sense that just it's going around Europe, but also because of COVID, obviously. But so normally we'd be in one base. Say when it was in France, we were in Paris. But this time we've been based in sunny Salford for the most of it, except for the games that at Wembley we've managed to get to. So it's been a little bit different to normal, but having said that, the preparation is usually the same. We've got these big huge books of going through all the teams, and it's little stats that might help, make a load of notes, and then arrive at the studio. The guys will come in probably an hour or two after me, the pundits, and they'll go through their analysis and say, you know, they'll plan all that. Then I usually get into the studio about an hour before kickoff, and then really, you know, that's the only bit of live football you can plan is the opening bit. So with England games, for example, it's quite a lot to plan because it's an hour. That's a lot of build up, so it's a lot of prep, but once the game kicks off, that, you know, there's, you plan the stuff as it goes along. So obviously we're constantly looking during the first half, not for, you know, and we're also trying to enjoy the game as well. But the guys are looking for analytical points as we go by, and then at halftime it's all a bit it goes by very quickly, and that's how it works again in the second half. And then it's dependent, then you've got to try and think about a closing line and how are you going to get the boys into their analysis and stuff like that, and then hand into interviews. So it's very ad hoc, ad lib. Most of it, but that's what makes it fun.
Yeah, it's brilliant just getting insight into that. I wanted to ask you as well how the sort of nerves compare, because you've played for England in massive games, but also you hear the viewing figures for these games, particularly as England go far, and it's incredible, isn't it, just how, I mean, I'm speaking to people that had no interest in football prior to this, who were just glued to it. So how much of a buzz do you get? Nervous? Do the butterflies kick in before you go on air? How does that work?
I don't get nervous. I get a buzz, an adrenaline rush, especially with the big games like the England ones that we've had, you know, huge audiences, over 20 million on TVs at home alone, let alone. And then we've got like 5-6 million on downloads on the iPlayer and what. So you're really reaching. I would say if you then put in people that go and watch it in pubs, in large groups, etc., I think you're well over 30 million realistically. And it's staggering, really. I didn't get nervous when I played either, to be honest.
Really?
Just a little bit on the coach, always on the bus ride to the ground. Not nervous about the game, but slightly apprehensive about how I'd feel physically. Wow. That's the only thing that bothered me. I could tell in my warm-up whether I felt really sharp. But the truth is, actually, some of my better games when I felt rubbish. So it doesn't...
Really?
You know, it's like that. Wow. Well, that's what the whole thing about, you know, players getting tired and this, and then they rest them. But
yeah,
you know, often your best performances are when you're tired. Sometimes you feel great and you play like a dog. so you can never read it that well. But nervous wise, no.
Yeah, especially interesting.
When the program starts or the match starts, it's just what you want to be in, the big games.
Yeah, it is. And on that, I want you to take us into the mindset of being in the studio. Is it difficult sort of separating the emotion of being an England fan, but also broadcasting live an England game? Do you have to sort of rein it in a bit? And how hard is that when if there's a last minute goal, say?
Well, I mean, I don't know whether you saw, coverage when we certainly the Germany game when they
I
got
did, yeah.
The film was going bonkers. So you can see
that's partly why it
doesn't, doesn't stop us getting too carried away, because ultimately we're desperate for England to do well. We've all played for the country. We're huge fans of the team, and also it's much better for the broadcast when it goes well.
Yeah.
It's win-win. So yeah, we get emotional, but then there is that moment. I had it. I think it's not with England, but not yet. It might, because it wasn't a late winning goal yet for England. So so there's plenty of time to calm down a little bit.
Yeah.
But the Leicester game at the FA Cup final, which obviously I was a massive Leicester fan. And then when we scored, I went nuts. And then the VAR goal was like a minute to go or something. And I'd just started writing some notes and things I was going to say and my closing line. And I saw in the corner of my eye, I saw the ball go in the net, and I've just gone, oh, no.
Wow.
I've had two broadcasting ambitions.
Yeah.
One of them's to broadcast the FA Cup final with Leicester winning it, and the other's for England to win a major tournament that I'm broadcasting.
Yeah.
The two could happen within the space of 2 months. That's not tempt fate.
That's amazing.
It would be unbelievable. And both will be at Wembley.
Yeah.
But anyway, so the VAR came in, and it ruled out Chilwell's goal, and then I'm jumping up again, and then I thought, get a grip, and so I'm trying to, and I was getting emotional.
Yeah,
I
could sense that actually.
And I think if England win as well, imagine if they score, a last minute win, if they get to the final, because we're not doing the semi, but if they get to the final, and they win at the end, then that will be wonderfully difficult.
Yeah, brilliant. Even the way you were explaining that, I just had sort of goosebumps just thinking about that. Let's talk about England then so far. I mean, has it been the perfect tournament, Gary? I look at, Kane scoring goals now. Raheem's been brilliant. Luke Shaw with the assists. There's no injuries. We haven't conceded a goal. There's no players that are on suspensions. It almost seems like this has been perfect, hasn't it, for England, this tournament?
Well, I was talking to the boys, funnily enough. We had a drink after the game the other night, and I was just saying, there's so many tournaments that England have played in where we've been close, but things haven't gone for us. We've had like a bad break or a bit of bad luck, or pre-tournaments when Beckham being injured, Rooney being injured. In Portugal when Rooney was flying and we were going to, and then he broke his toe. Hand of God, Frank Lampard's over the line goal not given.
Yeah.
Semi-final against Germany, Waddle hits the inside of the post and it comes out. Fractions.
Yeah.
But in this tournament, for the first time in my living memory, things have gone for us. Mm. We haven't had injuries. Teams have missed a couple of chances against. Yes, we played brilliantly, but wonderfully organised. But things happen on fraction. Thomas Muller misses that chance.
Incredible.
But he never misses.
Yeah.
And you just start to think, well, maybe. But I mean, obviously that can go wrong. And this whole luck thing is I'm more a believer in making your own luck, but it does seem like for the first time ever, actually, they've got a few breaks, even with the way the draw panned out. I mean, I know we had to play Germany and stuff, but you're certainly on the better side of the draw, but you do that by winning the group. But I must say the team they've been superb. And I think the way Gareth set them up, it's not the way I would do it because I'm not a manager, and that's probably why I'd never be a very good manager. But he's thought it through, and he's worked out how to win games through a tournament. And you have to say he's got it spot on. And it would be so difficult with having so many good players to leave out. Although it's much better having good players to leave out than not very good ones. But there's strength in depth. I mean, I've been saying for years now, probably two, three years that we're going to be very successful, England, for the next decade or so. I honestly thought this tournament might be a bit early for some of them, but he's mixed it up. Mm. Yeah, because they're very young. But, sometimes with youth comes fearlessness. And they've played, they've been brilliant. And we've got such a good squad now that we're going to be really, really seriously competitive and win things over the next 10, 15 years. I've been
no doubt for you.
I used to get rubbished by saying that, and all of a sudden I'm starting to think.
I want to see.
Fingers crossed. I'm not.
Yeah, very true.
Things can go wrong. One-off games you can lose, obviously.
I wanted to, you touched upon Gareth Southgate there, and I just wanted to go into Gareth in a bit more depth, because one of the things that I think, looking from the outside, and obviously I'm completely looking at way more from the outside than yourself, but England teams in the past, there's been a lot of teams that a lot of people can usually predict starting lineups. So I think with this team, you look at social media, no two people can seem to agree on the starting lineup. And there's been a lot of people talking about whatever team Gareth picks, but every single game, tactically, he's got it spot on. So how much credit does Gareth deserve for his game management, his tournament management?
He deserves loads of credit because he has got it absolutely spot on. And you know, ultimately you'll be judged by your results and your performances. And they've been excellent. You know, the only game they really struggled was probably Scotland, and those games are one-offs. I've played them with, you know, when we played Republic of Ireland, and that competitive, nature of games against your neighbours and stuff is always, it's always different to a tournament. Everyone, oh, you're useless after, you know, but they're not that relevant to actually what's going on in the tournament itself. But no, he's got it spot on. Five games, not conceded a goal, looked really solid generally. The way that the two midfield lads have gelled together and pivoted so beautifully. And as you say, it's, you know, everyone's got their own idea of a team. He should play, and Jack Reeves should play, and this, and it must be immensely difficult because you can't play them all.
No,
you can't. But the important thing in this tournament is that, you know, after a long, hard season where people probably, you know, concertinaed season as well, kind of more games in a shorter period of time, the fact that you've got a big squad and you can bring in fresh legs occasionally, like Jadon Sancho the other night, is very helpful. And you can also bring fresh legs on, you know, an hour into the game, you've got a couple of players on yellow cards, you can take them off and put players on that are of equal stature. And that's really important, so the quality doesn't dip. And that's a massive bonus. And it's the first time we've had that kind of depth in a squad in a tournament.
Yeah, I totally agree. I've got to get your thoughts on Harry Kane as a former striker yourself and a man who scored loads of goals. I said in my intro, you do have the record for the most tournament goals. Kane is creeping up on you. But how big was he? Just talk us through the sort of psychology involved as a striker. How big was that goal against Germany for him?
Oh, massively important. Because the one thing you get as a striker, it doesn't matter how good you are. In fact, in many ways, it's more difficult the better you are because there's more pressure exerted on you. You'll go two games without a goal like Harry did in this tournament and the whole world thinks you're finished, which is, you know, it's ludicrous because you judge strikers over a long period of time. No striker scores in every game. So, but then people get onto you more because the expectations are so high. They automatically think there's something wrong with you as soon as you don't start scoring. And I've had that. Alan Shearer's had that. All strikers would have had that. And Harry's just been through that. But as soon as you score that first goal, I had a very similar thing in Mexico 86. I didn't score in the first two games. People were calling for my, you know, get me out the side. Bobby Robson stuck with me and I came good. I scored as soon as I got the first one against Poland, then two more followed, and then two against it, all of a sudden the game felt easy again. But it's a weird thing the way goal scoring works. It is streaky, but you know, Harry's reliable, he's dependable, you know that he doesn't miss many chances, and he's all round game's great as well, and he's a fine leader from the front.
Yeah, he's a world-class player. I saw a great tweet from you as well saying that you refer to him as a Rolls-Royce player and you refer to yourself as an old banger, saying you think that he will break the tournament record. One goal and he equals your tournament record. So I presume you think he will go on to break it. And how would you feel about that?
I'll be chuffed. Yeah. I'm genuinely chuffed. I mean, people always say to you, it's like when Harry won the Golden Boot at the World Cup. People say, oh, you must be a bit sad now that you're not the only English player to win the Golden Boot. And I'd say no. No, not only is it great for them and it's great for the team, but it also reminds people, because I appear on these graphics and
that's
things
so
like that.
True.
And,
so, yeah, it
and all of a sudden it reminds people that I actually played the game. Because a lot of people of a certain generation, well, quite a few generations now I'm getting this off, but quite a few people that probably have no idea that I ever used to play the game. So it's a nice gentle reminder. Suddenly you can say, oh,
I hadn't thought of it like that.
Level with Alan Shearer, and he's one behind me. So it gives, you know, it's a reminder in many ways. So I quite enjoy it, and I hope he smashes it. I hope he goes past it, and I hope he goes past it in the next two games, because that would mean that England would be very close to winning it.
Yeah, brilliant. I want to ask you just some light-hearted ones. The mood in the camp, we've spoken to an array of England players now. Every single one of them has said just how special this atmosphere is that Gareth's created. They're having such a good time. How important is that sort of off the field, that there is that togetherness? I mean, even they've even bought the inflatable unicorns back, Gary, which the fans seem to be loving. Did you have that in your day, you and Gazza?
I can honestly say I've had a few unicorns, but never inflatable ones.
What's an answer?
It's great, the togetherness that they seem to have got. And of course that comes with success as well. If you're doing well on the pitch, it makes life so much better. Off the pitch, it keeps the ones that are not quite happier than they would otherwise be. It must be very difficult to keep 26 players content.
Yeah.
Especially after you leave three out of them and the squad altogether, which seems to me a bit absurd. But yeah, you can see they've got a lovely togetherness. A lot of young, you know, the average age is really young. And they just look like they're having a ball. And obviously he's thought about keeping them occupied. He's thought about trying to avoid them getting too bored. It's a lot easier nowadays as well, because when I played, there were no telephones, no mobiles, no PlayStations or, you know, those kind of things. No social media, probably for the best. it was a bit different back then. So we also used to try and make our own entertainment. We had some fantastic nights doing stuff. We had these racing nights with Gazza and Fred Street, the old physio, used to put together.
Yeah.
Fred used to get these videos of some race meeting in America from 3 years ago, and then they put them on, and I was the bookmaker with Peter Shilton, and all the players had little bets on the racing, and we did quite well, obviously, as bookmakers do, and I knew how to run a book anyway because I did it when I was a kid. So we went. One night we had one of the race meetings and we were doing quite nicely, and they got to the seventh race. The usual thing, guys came in, a little bet on this one, a little bet on this one. And then there was no interest in this horse, so I put it out in the odds, and then it drifted out to about, I don't know, 8 to 10 to 1.
Yeah.
And then all the big hitters came in, Gazza, Brian Robson, Chris Waddle.
Class.
All them came with massive bets on this horse, and I thought, oh, this stinks, this stinks. So obviously what had happened, Gazza got hold of Fred Street and said, you can find out who wins the seventh race. And so they've done as a kipper.
Oh, no.
So all the big, everyone, they all knew. So we're watching the race and I was going, this stinks. And Schultz going, oh, no. And this horse, like, absolutely motored clear and won. And the whole squad did the conga around the swimming pool.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Oh, so brilliant.
You need that kind of camaraderie, even if it was at our expense on this game.
Wow. So how times have changed from the horses doing the conga with Gazza, and now they're on inflatable unicorns playing Uno.
Not a lot of difference.
More serious now, obviously you've played in huge games. I just wanted to get into your mindset of how the players will be feeling in terms of, obviously so much is made now, we're at the business end of the tournament. How hard is it to sort of block out all that external noise and all the pressure and the nerves that come with what is a massive game?
It is, but they're loving it, aren't they? And that's what you've got to do. This is what footballers at that level, that's what you dream of. This is what you want. Get into the semi-final and hopefully a final of a major tournament. And the other good thing, of course, is a lot of these young players particularly have had success at international level and youth levels and under 21 levels, you know, World Cup winners and stuff. So, you know, they know what it's like to win a tournament, which is also important. But yeah, I think I don't think that they'll be worried. It's the blocking the external noise out. Well, it was that was certainly easier in our day because you didn't get it. And also, of course, they're back in our country now as well. And there's social media. There was no social media. So when we came back from major tournament, the two that made World Cups that I played in were in Mexico and Italy.
Italy, yeah.
You had no idea about the bonkersness that is actually occurring back home. And then you come back at the end of it and it's like, oh, my God. And everyone is like all over you. Every chat show wants you. And I remember driving up to somewhere, the service station, and stopping. and like cars were pulling, and it was like people were coming from everywhere. It took about 45 minutes to do my petrol in the car. So you don't realize quite how mad it is. But the fact they're around it and the social media now, obviously they'll have a much greater grasp on the significance of it.
Let's look ahead then to the game, England against Denmark. Obviously, Denmark, it was so tragic seeing what happened to Christian Eriksen. I'm sure we can all agree it's so great to hear that he's out of hospital now, and we wish him a full recovery. How do you see the game going, and where do you think are the important areas if England are to progress from this one?
Well, I think Gareth seems to have worked out the important areas in all the games that they've had, and I think that's been the important thing here. I suspect he'll play is perhaps a similar team to the Ukraine game. I think, you know, top right-hand side will be the debatable thing, whether it's, you know, Sancho, I thought was brilliant. Thacker, I thought was brilliant in his game. And, you know, Foden is brilliant. So you've got three players in that position. I think Mount will play a game because Mount gives you a bit of everything. You know, he can create, he can score. He's fantastically energetic. He can close down, which is really important. And obviously Kane and Sterling were their must starts because they've, you know, been two best players. So, and then you've got people. It's so difficult, isn't it? Because then you can go like, well, what about Jack Grealish? And
I think
in many ways, Jack's been a little bit unfortunate. He's come on and made a real impact. Yeah. And that might, sometimes you come on as a sub and make impacts. People can go, well, that's maybe the best for him.
Interesting.
But at the same time, he plays in the role that Sterling plays. Mm. And Sterling is, you know, he's made himself undroppable. So it's difficult, but he seems to have come up with a system and a way of playing and the right personnel at the right time, and hopefully that'll continue again against Denmark, who will be stronger than Ukraine, but tough opposition, and they've got that emotional drive that you mentioned, perhaps that came from the Eriksen incident. So and they've got that togetherness as well as all teams do if you go this far into the tournament. I strongly fancy England to be in the final.
Gary, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you. And I really hope that your wish of broadcasting the final and England winning at Wembley comes true. Real pleasure. Thanks for joining us, mate.
My pleasure. Cheers.
The ref is just about to blow the whistle on yet another episode of the official England podcast. But don't go anywhere because we'll be back tomorrow. Yes, I am lucky enough to say I'll be at the game and we'll be bringing you all the reaction from Wembley. Tonight promises to be a momentous occasion. They've already inspired an entire nation. But if the Three Lions progress to their first final in a major tournament in over 50 years, they will become legends. So it's only fitting that I let the boys have the final word. All that's left for me to say is see you tomorrow. Stay safe. Come on, England, and take it away, lads.
To be coming back to Wembley is a great thing for us.
Wembley's our home. It's where we grew up watching. It's where we want to play.
It's going to be special. 60,000. It's going to feel like 90.
What we've learned over kind of past tournaments, especially, is trying to peak at the right time. The best time to be peaking is in the knockout stage. And obviously, the later we go in this tournament, the tougher teams you face.
Denmark were obviously in a semi-final there for a reason, and that's credit to them.
They've proven now for years that they're a top team. I think they're the highest ranked team that we'd have played in this competition.
I've got to give them a lot of respect after what happened to Christian Eriksen.
We sometimes talk about perspective in sport, but it's very rare that we actually have it. But it was a moment where it really brought it home. What they went through that day, the way their captain was, the way the group was, and that's been powerful. They're riding a wave of emotion.
They've got that extra motivation and fire in their stomach to go and perform for him.
That's a powerful force that's coming to Wembley.
The game itself, we know what's ahead of us. A chance to go one step beyond the 96 team that got to the semis and get to our first final since 66.
We've just got to fully focus on what we can control, and that is the performance on the night, and just give it absolutely everything like we have been so far in this tournament.
I feel like this group of players will feel this is, you know, just the next challenge, and we won't feel totally satisfied if it's just a semi-final for us.
This time, we've got to make it that step further and try and make everyone's dreams come true.
It's a great opportunity for us to go and create our own history.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.